Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage.
Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Eric Shapiro. David North Martino. John Copenhaver. And Al Warren.
106.5 FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Dave Martino is in the room.
I am in the room.
Do you know what happened? I have to say, I saw this ad. I saw it all over the place, and I thought they were talking about you.
Oh.
Because it said, man has eaten a record 34,000 Big Macs in his lifetime. And I thought, wow, what is Dave doing, right? And
then, yeah.
Then it said, no, his name's Donald Gorski, and he's 70. So I knew you weren't quite that old. But he ate 728 more Big Macs in 2023, bringing him to 34,128 in a world, the Guinness World Record of eating the most Big Macs.
Wow. Well, at least I have something to aspire to.
Yeah. You've got to be close, right? You're up there.
Thanks, Al.
You're welcome. I just don't understand why someone does that. But, hey, I love freedom, and freedom's what it's all about. If he wants do that, have at her. But, you know, it says something. McDonald's can use that because the man's 70. He doesn't look in terrible shape or anything. And he's done 34,000-plus Big Macs and doesn't have high cholesterol or anything.
I'm on the wrong diet program.
You are eating wrong. So you got to be eating Big Macs instead of these other sit-down restaurants, you know, all that stuff. You got to, you know, eat the real stuff.
That's right.
You know, it's crazy. Mm. You know, it's almost like the end of the world there. Speaking of that, we've got an author writing an end of the world book. So we're talking about Synthetica, and the author's with us, Keith Anthony Baird. So thank you for being here, Keith.
Thank you for having me, Al, and Dave. And I have to say, that's the most surreal introduction to a podcast I've done yet.
Were you? Did I interrupt you? Were you eating a Big Mac? Right?
No, I wasn't even thinking of eating a Big Mac, but oh my God, it's just...
Now you are.
Well, no, I'm not actually. No, no, I'm not. I've just eaten my my dinner here in the UK, so I'm fine. I'm good to go.
Yeah. Well, I always try to find... Now, see, it's the House of Mystery. I got to have a mystery every day, and... That is a mystery in a lot of ways. Why would you do that?
Yeah, very good.
Can you imagine eating 728 Big Macs last year alone?
Oh, man.
Like, wow. Wow. They got to know him by name, right? You better get free coffee or something. But, you know, I will say he's 70 and he's living good. And I don't know. maybe it's not as bad as we think it is.
I think there's probably something in it which is kind of like maybe mummifying him or something like that.
Yeah, it's a preservative. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably something in it that's keeping him going. But.
Yeah, yeah. He's naturally, you know, he's going to be living to 150 or something. So they don't have to do anything with him. He's just preserved so well that, man. That's quite a claim to fame, I'll tell you.
Absolutely. You've absolutely fried my mind with this. I don't know how this interview is going to go now. I think my brain cells are just kind of like, oh, God.
Wait, you don't eat Big Macs ever, hey? You don't go to McDonald's?
Well, I used to when I was younger, but when I got older and got probably a bit more sensible, I just don't sort of go for that kind of fast food thing anymore. It just seems quite tasteless to me, to be honest. I prefer sort of more organic food, really.
Well, that's something you get as you get a little bit wiser, a little bit smarter, plus your body gets older and needs something a little better than
I think it craves wine more than anything else, so
so there you go. Now
there's lots of vitamin C in wine, isn't there? So there you go.
That's right. See, now we know. Listen, how did you get into the writing world? I don't know if I ever asked that before. Like, what made you decide that you wanted to write books?
Well, I'd always been involved in publishing in some kind of way. I'm 54 now, so 30 years ago, good God, it seems like forever. I was setting up my magazine just on a regional sort of basis here in the UK. And then I managed to get it on national TV. I managed to get it some exposure on a program. And then I got picked up by a national distributor. So they put me into the kind of distribution network over here. So my magazine was launched. I was going for about 6 months, and then all of a sudden I went national, but it was just kind of like so big, and I was just kind of like one guy. It saw me traveling from where I was in the country, from the north of the country, down to London quite a lot. So I was kind of back and forth. And when that all collapsed, as inevitably it would, because I was so green as grass, I ended up in local newspapers. And then I worked my way through the kind of hierarchy there to become like a senior sub-editor. So I was kind of more in a position where I was always editing other people's writing. And then I became the publishing editor for a national web-based company over here. But it was really kind of dry and boring stuff. It was kind of like business documents and legal documents and things like that. But all of that kind of experience sort of gave me quite a lot of editing experience. But I always had this kind of like drive within me, sort of, I really want to write my own stuff. 2016, I decided, right, I'm gonna give this a go. So I decided then, and the very first thing I did was I dove into the deep end, and I wrote a 105,000 word novel, which was the very first piece of fiction that I ever tackled. Like a bit of an idiot, really. Because I kind of got like into the middle, you know, the marathon middle that everybody says, oh, this is, you can't see the light for the end of the tunnel and all the rest of it. And I just kind of, I was struggling because I was working full time in a full time day job. I was trying to write in the evenings, and then I was writing on weekends. And it took a long time. It took like a year and a half to write that. And then stupidly, I wrote another 100,000 word novel straight after that. I didn't learn my lesson.
Oh.
and then I kind of went down to part time work, which is kind of that happened in about, oh God, let me see, maybe sort of 2019. So that gave me a lot more time on my hands to write. Around about 2021, I sort of decided I wasn't going to do self-publishing anymore. I kind of felt that I'd gone about as far as I could with that. And then I started sending my work out to publishers. So I landed a contract with Bridget's Gate Press in Kansas. And they put that dark fantasy title out in 2022. And obviously Synthetica is the next one. So I got another contract from them for this. And then there's going to be a second one out this year in November, which is it's a horror novel. It's all about vampires, and that one's in collaboration with a fellow British author called Beverly Lee. She's kind of like our Anne Rice, if you like, over here. So that's kind of like the journey to writing, the way it happened for me. It's kind of one of those, I don't know, I guess it's kind of like cliche in a way. you know, everybody's got that book inside of them. And I always had that idea for that first novel since I was about 19. But I didn't get the pen it until I was about 45. Because my life had just gone in different directions, you know. But I think that tends to happen quite a lot, that people come to writing late, certainly from all the people that I know via social media and what have you. There's not many young ones really out there doing it that I know of anyway. So.
No, and it's good. I mean, you get a little life experience, and I think it shows in a writer that's lived a little, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, rather than just writing 100,000 words and running and doing that, so you get, and that in itself teaches you something, right? Like you.
Oh God, yeah. That was a big learning curve. I felt like I dove into the Pacific Ocean, and I was just kind of like, here I am, all on my own, surrounded by sharks.
Oh, and it's true.
You just gotta get on with it, basically. So.
Yeah, you just have to forget it and just keep moving forward because, you know, otherwise you end up eating 700 Big Macs a year.
I would have liked those Big Macs then, because I could have fed the sharks with them, and I'd have kept them at bay. I would have been
That's right. Poison the sharks. There you go. Oh, that's terrible. So now you are into science fiction, obviously. You write science fiction. And I will say, so now this book here, let's talk about the premise. So what's the basic premise out of it?
Basic premise is you have a dystopian world. You're talking like the time scale is kind of like 2113. So, you know, everything we kind of are doing bad to the world has kind of come to a sort of crisis point at that point. You've got a very different kind of aligned world in terms of political alignments, you know, territory shifting. You actually have a scenario in this where China, believe it or not, is kind of like in a coalition, in an international coalition, because it has a war with Japan, and Japan becomes the enemy, the sort of international enemy. So you have coalition forces from like France and the UK and from America fighting alongside the Chinese to crush Japan. So the setting for the story after that becomes New Tokyo. Basically, it's relabeled that by the Chinese government. But it's kind of like a fractious, kind of lawless territory, because it's kind of like, you know how Germany was divided up after World War II? And you kind of had like the Russians, and then you had the Americans kind of like looking after different sectors. So it's kind of like that in a way. And then it kind of gets rebuilt. And then it's kind of populations from around the world are kind of like invited to come there. So it becomes like a melting pot of cultures. So you have like the French Quarter, or you have like the, you know, the German Quarter, or the Americans and so on. Lots of different other cultures. And really kind of a world a bit like if you imagine Blade Runner. Yeah, it's kind of like that. So it's kind of like that future sort of dystopian city. Where you've got a lot of advanced technology and, you know, the flying cars and all of that kind of thing. But without actually spoiling anything, it's kind of like that is the setting and that is the world, but it kind of like isn't really what's going on. Yeah. And it's kind of like the military are involved. Yeah. The US military. So it's kind of like a black ops type of thing. Basically, an ex-Marine called Balam Hendricks, he's the main character. After the war, he's basically living a life in New Tokyo as a bounty hunter. And he becomes like this feared bounty hunter who's got such a reputation. They call him the Reverend, because if you meet him, he'll be giving you your last rites. Yeah, he doesn't take his mark in for money. He basically just kills all of the people who are his targets. So it becomes this kind of like feared bounty hunter. And really what it's about is he gets an assignment from a crime lord whereby he has to go into a virtual reality construct called Synthetica in order to track down a rogue employee of this crime lord. It's difficult to kind of like say anything more than that, because I'll give too much of the plot away. It'll just spoil too many things. But that's essentially what his task is, his assignment is. And normally he's just operating in the real world, killing people. but he has to go and sort of be more of a detective to kind of find this guy in cyberspace.
Well, do you consider this a cyberpunk novel?
Yes, I do, because yes, it's dystopian, but obviously a subgenre of that is cyberpunk. So really the whole setting, the city and kind of everything, it's got kind of like a very noir feel to it. It's obviously got like the kind of interplay between him and other people. A lot of it is colored by his military experience. So it kind of brings that sort of military vibe to his job. But it's kind of like, I mean, you could label it sort of urban fantasy and noir and maybe a techno thriller. There's lots of different kind of like genre mashups that kind of like make it what it is. You know, dark sci-fi, I guess you could kind of call it, really.
Well, with the cyberpunk aspect and maybe some of the other genres, for the listeners and for Al,
yeah,
especially for Al, we're trying to teach him about these different genres.
Right, yeah. Okay.
I haven't been doing a great job. what is cyberpunk and some of these other genres that kind of meld with the story? And, you know, especially with cyberpunk, how has it changed over the years? You know, because I know it started kind of before we had a computer revolution.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you go back, you know, sort of, I guess the sort of mass representations of those kind of things would have been like Blade Runner back in 82. But I mean, everything's so much more evolved now with AI. I mean, kind of then it was kind of what this could be, as opposed to now we're kind of like living side by side with that to a degree. It's kind of now being integrated. So, you know, that's how things are evolving in terms of, I don't even want to touch on how AI is kind of infiltrating into screenwriting and into Hollywood and, you know, and to a degree, obviously, publishing. You know, publishers are having to be very wary of, you know, they're having to check things and all the rest of it. So, I mean, I guess it's kind of like we're living with it now, whereas before it was more of a concept, a projected sort of concept. So, you know, it's kind of, but I mean, all of the elements of cyberpunk really haven't really changed since then, to be honest. I just think it's kind of like more the technology now is kind of with us. So, I mean, but the way that I approached Synthetica was like, there's been one early review from one of the arcs where I think the reader was kind of like, well, this has all been done before. And I get that. But I think what they missed was is that because of what's really going on with the story, behind the story, is that that's how everything would be perceived by the main character, because kind of like the main character is making the story up as it goes, because everything's kind of like in a VR construct. So does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of unfolding in the way that he thinks it. So it's all based upon his experiences and his knowledge. So his experiences and his knowledge would be, if I was in a futuristic city, then I would expect to see flying cars and I would expect to see tons of neon on the skyline. Yeah. And I'd be blasted with all these adverts, and down at street level, there'd be all these like street cleaning machines going around. And then there'd be all these stalls with, you know, kind of fast food, and let's not get on the burgers again.
Big Mac.
but you know what I mean?
Big Mac.
Yeah, yeah. So the concept is kind of like, I can understand where a reader might think, well, hang on, none of this is original. But really, that's not the story at all, you know? So it's really hard for me to describe. It's almost like it's, I think the only way I can describe it for you, for it to make sense, is that it's kind of like a VR immersion inside a VR immersion. So when I was trying to write this thing, I was trying to get my head around how would you do a VR immersion inside of one that's already taking place. Yeah. So that's kind of like the difference with Synthetica. And I think there's been obviously some early readers of that have kind of, right, I get the concept of this, but I can kind of see where others might not. They might just trip up and just kind of like see it at a sort of superficial level. But I mean, when you get to the end and you have the reveal, you know, there's kind of a lot of technical jargon in there, and you have a doctor sort of explaining what's going on. So I can kind of understand maybe if a reader misses all of the technical blurb involved and the constructs and all the rest of it. But it's definitely a different thing from kind of, I think, cyberpunk that we've seen before. we'll just have to see how it's received, whether people fully get what I'm trying to put out there or not.
Right.
We'll be in the pudding, I guess.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you know. Hand it out at McDonald's. See, but the, you know, Synthetica. So that is.
Are we going to get them to sponsor this program? Is that what's happening?
I'm working on it. But they think I'm. I think they think I'm just a little bit too far out there for them. I'm not exactly family friendly here. So I don't know if they like that. You know, but. We'll see, you know. Now, virtual reality is really, you know, Synthetica is basically that. So how do you create that world? Like, how does a writer like yourself sit down and go, you know, and do this?
That was the challenge. That really was. Because like I say, it's not just kind of VR on its own. It's VR within VR. So, I think VR probably is kind of like too light sort of reference for it. If you think of something which is like, I guess in a way it's kind of like the Matrix, where you have somebody who's fully immersed in something and not aware of their sort of conscious existence, because their conscience is kind of elsewhere. Yeah.
So right.
It's not like VR, where you have someone sitting in their living room with a VR headset on and maybe some gloves, and they're kind of like doing a kind of home VR experience. There's no kind of like, it's only visual, really. There's no kind of real sort of sensory perception with all of that. Whereas with this, it's a full immersion. So you smell things, you feel things. Like if it rains, you're standing getting wet in rain. You know, so it's kind of like all of your senses are attuned to what's happening. So that's the first part of it. And then when Hendrix, who is the main character, when he goes into the full immersion of Synthetica in his head, he's going into another experience of New Tokyo, where he experiences everything. Like he goes. He checks out a theory, for example. He goes, right, I wonder what if alcohol tastes like alcohol, if that whole experience is just the same as it is when I'm out in the real world. So he goes to a bar and he's like, yeah, that's the same. That all tastes the same. The guys at the Synthetica program, they've got all the information totally nailed. Like when it rains, I feel the rain. When it's, you know, when the wind blows, he feels all that. The sights, the sounds, the smells, everything. And the construct is meant to have been generated by lots of different people who have been immersed, fully immersed into the program. So all of their experiences of the city are then fed into this massive supercomputer. Yeah. So that's how it can simulate everything. Because it's encountered so many different people's perceptions of what that reality is. So it's like a big thing. It's only a novella, and I think, you know, a lot of sci-fi readers are kind of like, well, I want a lot of world building. I want a novel that's 125,000 words long. Whereas this novella is kind of like around 40,000 words. So all it's meant to be really is it's kind of like 2 days, 3 days tops, like a snapshot of this guy's life on an assignment as a bounty hunter. So they're never going to get. That was always kind of like the battle for me, was to put enough world building into it so someone would get the concepts of everything and hopefully themselves be immersed enough in it. But also it was about the mission, you know? So that was kind of like the balance that I had to strike within 40,000 words. So obviously I can't do a massive amount of world building. It's almost like the world building is irrelevant anyway, because it's not the real story that's happening. So it was... I mean, when I tried to explain it to my publisher, I was kind of like, well, it's essentially basically VR within VR, but there's a lot more going on than that. So your question was, how do you even approach that? I had to think a lot and very deep and very hard about how I was going to take on this challenge, because it certainly wasn't straightforward. And I thought to myself, the only way I can make it work is if I make this an immersive experience for the reader. So I went for first person point of view. So basically the character is talking about everything that he's experiencing. So you're kind of like sitting on his shoulder going through all of this with him. Yeah. I thought if it was a different point of view, then it might be lost in translation. I don't think it really would have worked. And the publisher agreed that it was the right way to go, to try and immerse the reader into that. There's kind of like a trick and a trap to it. It's kind of like, I'm going to make you believe that this is what's going on, when really this isn't what's going on. Something else entirely is going on. Complicated, basically. Very complicated.
Well, yeah, well, you're totally, like, you're, when you're with the character, then you're totally in that VR experience with that character.
Yeah.
As you were creating, especially like what the character is seeing, and there's multi levels of his experience.
Yeah.
Did in creating even like the surface level where he, you know, I assume he thinks he is.
Yeah.
Did the speed, today's speed of innovation and technology, did it make it harder to write the book? Did anything in tech change while you were writing this book, that where you had to kind of change things a bit because maybe something had been developed that you had that you had imagined?
That's a good question. To be honest, I mean, I kind of tried to approach it in the sense of, like, if I guess if you think about it, you know, way back when something like Blade Runner came out, that was again sort of imagining what a future would be like. So I didn't really sort of try and get myself bogged down in what was happening in the here and now, because I could imagine what was going to happen in 2113 in this. So it kind of in a way just gave me a lot of freedom to just kind of explore that and say, well, I can just make anything up that I want, like all of these kind of like things that they wear on their wrists, which they kind of like, they can access a thing called the spectigree, and it can bring up information, or they can send files to different people via doing this kind of thing, and it would sort of pop up like a hologram in front of them, which they could like sort of spin round and look from one side to the other, and they can pair people with this kind of thing as well. I suppose where we're at now in terms of becoming, the world is becoming increasingly cashless in terms of its society. You know, more and more, it's just kind of like, well, you have a piece of plastic on you and you zap a machine and then you've paid for something, or you've got an app on your phone. Just kind of mirroring that, but sort of taking it a lot further in the sense that it was just kind of like a digital future. Yeah. So there wasn't really anything I thought now that's changing that makes me think, oh, if I use that as kind of like a starting point, well, then it just gives me like this really big canvas to just kind of roll out lots of different ideas and just go with it. But what I also tried to do was I tried to sort of keep some kind of like, because I guess when society moves on, because even now there are people out there in the world who are collectors of things. You have there's a reference in there where he's going, hey, I'm in this apartment and there's a whole bookcase there and there's some actual books. You know, these things must be worth a fortune because they're actual books. In 2113, and even something like a pencil, there's a pencil there, and he's like, do you ever see a pencil now, you know? And then you have his friend, his army buddy, Danzig, who's you know, he's just so into Americana, and he's got like he's got all classic Harley Davidsons and things like that. So I could sort of bring all of that into it as well, because, you know, it's a far future, but I still think in the future you're going to have situations where people are going to be keeping things which are very what's the word, they're very tactile, or they're very sort of you know, like for us now, if someone was to put something onto tape, on very analog, I guess is the word that I'm sort of reaching for, it allowed me to bring all of that kind of thing, and I also thought that would also bring a sort of element of kind of noir to the whole thing, you know, where you have that kind of underbelly, and you have that dark sort of sleazy part of a city, and, you know, not everything is as quite high tech there as it could be in other parts of the city where you've got these big corporations. So you've got like kind of like the black market side of it where people are still trading in old dusty stuff. So yeah, there's kind of all that in as well. Yeah. So that was a very good question. I never really thought of that before.
How do they get into the synthetica? How do they get into that world? Is it like a headset? Is it they hook up drugs? Like what? Give them a Big Mac? Like what happens?
Well, at the basically at the corporation that provides this alternative life. So basically what the same with synthetica is that if you are unhappy with your life in this dystopian city, And they know people are unhappy with their life in this dystopian city. So that's why they're providing this service, because they're basically making money off. We'll immerse you into this other life experience, and you can be there for days, weeks, months, whatever it is. So they basically bring them along, give them a health check, put them on a drip, put them into a pod, and they kind of like put them under. And they do put like a visor on them, but before they do that, they put this a drug, like you say, which is, they call it chromium contacts, and they drop it on the people's eyes, and it's kind of like the liquid mercury, so it kind of like crawls across their eyes and goes around the back of their eyes, a bit like sort of silver worms, if you like, and they say that that's the thing that sort of makes the mind be able to integrate with the technology, yeah, when they put the visor on. And then you just kind of like almost taken down a wormhole, and then you kind of are spat out into a carbon copy of the city, where you're going to live a different life. There's nothing sort of preordained in it. It's kind of like you can escape the city and create a better life for yourself, but still within the city, so you can go and do other things. So it's about taking you away from your everyday existence. And of course, for Hendrix, when he has to track down this rogue employee, it's more about, he's just used that as a way of evading. So like the crime lord knows that the rogue employee is at V-Trans Industries, yeah, Virtual Trans Industries. He's there, and he's kind of like in suspension, but there's all this high-tech security at VTI, so the crime lord can't get in. He can't retrieve this guy, and even if he did pull him out of that, then the guy would be comatose. So, because you can't just pull somebody out of this immersion program. So that's why he has to send in the bounty hunter to track him down. It's kind of like the whole thing's a decoy anyway for something completely different in the storyline. So basically, there's multi levels of storyline involved. So you've kind of got, how can I explain this? You've kind of got one level of storyline, then you've got another level of storyline, which is actually not the mission he's been sent on, but thinks that he's been sent on. So there's a different storyline, and then there's another storyline from that. But then ultimately, at the end, the reveal is none of that was ever the story anyway. It's something completely different involving the military. So there's kind of like lots of levels of storyline that I had to sort of work out, like how does this work with that one, and how does this sit in terms of layers. It's kind of like an onion. A digital onion, that's what it is.
Yeah, I'll have my Big Mac with onions.
Listen. Yeah, a digital onion.
Yeah, so your main character, the Reverend here,
yeah,
you know, Hendrix.
Yeah.
How did you create him? Did you create him after someone else? Did someone inspire him, or several people, or is this something that just happened in your brain? Like, where does the Reverend come from?
That just kind of happened, but I guess he sort of mirrors quite a lot of different characters in a way. I guess he's kind of like, you know, he's that typical sort of, he's kind of like a morally gray guy after everything that's happened to him. You know, they tend to be the most interesting characters anyway. You know, he's in a world where, you know, he's lost the only people that he loves because they were taken away from him, his wife and daughter, supposedly. That's all I can say. So yes, he has that kind of mindset of like, well, now I'm kind of like he's kind of like a shell of a man, really. He's just kind of like that burnout. I mean, obviously he's post-war anyway, so he's kind of like, he's been through the whole PTSD thing, and he's, you know, he was rebuilt with surgery, put back together, and just, he's kind of like sort of a broken man that's kind of like a loner, who doesn't trust anybody. God, am I talking about myself here?
I was going to say. So you put yourself in the book.
No, I didn't really. I mean, if you imagine kind of like somebody who's kind of like, you know, as tough as hell, like kind of like Judge Dredd, or like the Punisher, or, you know, or Blade or something like that, you know, and he's got that kind of loner aesthetic. And, you know, sort of quick one-liners and all that kind of stuff. And he's just kind of like this jaded guy who, in his life in New Tokyo, he's smoking his no-glow cigars. He's drinking rum, and he's taking pills, which he calls Narcoplex, because he says those help with like the physical aspect of where he was reconstructed with surgery. So, you know, he feels like there's kind of things going on with the surgery. He wasn't put back together really well. He's kind of got that sort of, his apartment where he lives is kind of like a fortress. It's just all high tech security. He doesn't trust anybody. And he's kind of in that business where if he trusts someone, it's liable to be the end of them. That's pretty much the character. I don't think I was particularly inspired by any one thing really. I just kind of like built him from a point of, well, if he's kind of like a morally grey guy and he's burnt out after war, and it just kind of evolved from there. I did sort of introduce an element of kind of like the Old West. Obviously with the look, he's got like a Dakota hat and then he's got like a big overcoat. You know, and obviously weapons concealed around them all over the place. So it was kind of like trying to make new Tokyo with the kind of like American element that's there in terms of population. I was kind of like trying to make it almost like a futuristic city, but also kind of like that Old West frontier vibe to it, where it was kind of lawless. And just kind of like maybe have that kind of a little bit of that atmosphere as well. How he kind of evolved, really. Maybe Clint Eastwood. I don't know. Maybe he was a bit of a fan.
Can you hear him? Can you hear your characters? Do you have an inner monologue in your head when you're writing this? Is that how you create dialogue and how you create prose, or do you do it a different way?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's kind of, I suppose as an author, it's the nearest thing I can ever, I mean, I've said this before when people have asked, the nearest thing I can think of is that it's kind of akin to, it's kind of like being like a method actor. So I guess what you try and do is you kind of put yourself in the role of your MC, and obviously, you know, kind of supporting cast as well. And you just try and sort of think about like how they would be, how they would interact with the world around them, people around them, and just kind of like develop the character in that way. I mean, to me, it was kind of easy with this guy. It was just kind of like, well, he's going to be jaded. He's not interested in anybody's BS. You know, he's heard it all. He's seen it all. And it was just kind of like, that's how I was going to develop the character. He was just kind of like as mean as a rattlesnake and just kind of, you know, didn't much care about anything, doesn't really much care about himself. You know, he's just kind of like existing. I guess in a profession like that, it's just kind of, you know, there's certainly not a great deal of joy in his life and his everyday existence, and he's living in a sort of dystopian kind of hellscape, really. Approaching the character that way was just kind of like, he just had to be just such a badass, you know, because the world around him's so bad, you know. So that was really my only thoughts with him, to be honest. That was it.
So did you have a meaning or a subtext in under the story that comes out that you want people to take away besides all the entertainment?
Yeah, I mean, there's a key bit in there which kind of states, it's called a Pledge of Allegiance, and it refers to like an American senator who's making a bid to become president, and he's kind of going on his campaigns, and he's saying, you know, should the people choose me, should I become president, then I will make sure that the veterans of the wars, you know, that we've sent them to, the veterans will be treated much better than they have been to date. Like, not just kind of like, you know, put back together and kind of like put in a veterans hospital and then, you know, given a bit of, sort of therapy, and then maybe sort of like push back out into society. So that's kind of like, the message really was kind of like, about the soldiers. That's what the underlying message is. It's about, like, you know, kind of a better treatment for them. That's what it was about.
Yeah, it's important, you know.
Yeah.
And so now you say you've got a second one that you're working on, or
it's written. Yeah,
it's written. Wow.
Oh yeah, it was done, like I say, with Beverly Lee, and she's a gothic horror writer, and she produces a lot of vampire themed works, and I mean, I've done lots of different, because I mean, essentially I just class myself as a dark fiction author, so I can write things that are just pure horror, or I could do things which are psychological thrillers, or like genre mashups. I like to do that kind of thing. So sci-fi, dystopian, post-apocalyptic. But for this one, I wanted to tackle a kind of real gothic setting, but I wanted to do it in a different way. I wanted to have, like, you know, in the typical sort of vampire trope is somebody gets bitten by an ancient vampire and then they become a vampire. Well, I was kind of like, well, I don't want that because that's been kind of done to death. So I thought, how can I tackle this differently? So basically it's about a Romani woman in the dark ages of Europe when all the witch hunts are taking place. She kind of like leaves society and goes to the wastes, the northern wastes, to kind of escape persecution. So she's pushed to the edge of civilization. And she's basically being chased by a pack of wolves, and she's running across a glacier and she falls down a crevasse. And then she enters this cave complex where there's this, so obviously that's under like sort of thousands of feet of this glacial ice. So this ancient civilization down in this cave complex was worshipping this kind of like cosmic horror creature from a different dimension. And it's still there, but everybody else obviously has died out long ago. And she encounters this creature. It could be like parasitic in a way. If you imagine kind of like something akin to a bat, but like crossed with a face hugger from Aliens. So that kind of like, she looks into a tomb and it's kind of inside the rib cage of a skeleton in there, and it comes out and it wraps around her face. And then when she comes to, the creature's off her, but it's put this kind of like parasitic seed inside of her. So that's how it transfers its essence. And that's how she becomes like a vampire. And then she makes her way back to civilization. And she decides she wants to have a vampiric family. So she goes around and turns all these other people into vampires. And they become like a traveling troupe that go throughout Europe to like galas and pageants, royal occasions. And they go and feed and feast at these occasions. And it sort of tracks what their adventures and everything down through the ages. But then a witch finder general, he kind of becomes aware of their existence. So he pursues them with his men. So it then becomes like a game of cat and mouse. And it goes down, it comes like right up to modern times. Yeah, we just wanted to do something different. I mean, both Beverly and I had different projects on at the time. Obviously, I was trying to finish Synthetica, and Beverly had various other things that she was doing. So what we did was I wrote the first sort of 5,000 words, send it to her. She added to that, sent it back. I wrote some more, sent it back to her, and it just kind of evolved that way. And it was a very easy and very natural thing. I think probably our writing styles when it comes to anything gothic were very close, very similar to each other. So it worked great. It never ever felt like it was hard work at any point in time. And plus it's only a novella. Again, it's only kind of like, you know, that sort of 40,000 word sort of mark. So yeah. it was just kind of like a back burner project. And, We were looking for a publisher for it, and then BGP, who I'm with, said, well, you know, send it to us, send some of it. So I sent a sample, and then Heather at BGP read it and said, oh God, when it's finished, send me the rest. We definitely want it. So that's how two were coming out this year. That's how it evolved. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, listen, are you set up? Do you have a website? Do you have social media or all that? Or are you staying away from that? Like, do you like readers to find you and interact, or what goes on?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely on Twitter. Even after Musk took over and ruined it. obviously I'm on Instagram as well. And I do have a website, but it's kind of another thing that's still under construction. So I think the best thing to do really for people is to just kind of like Google my name. And it'll give them a range of options as to like what they can do to, you know, come and see what I do.
Well, fantastic. Now the book is called Synthetica.
Yeah.
And you've got others too. So everyone, you know, come find them. It's Keith Anthony Baird. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Keith.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah.
Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.